Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the Senior Director of Charts at Billboard. And joining me, as always, is Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital, Katie Atkinson. Hello, Katie.
Oh, hi, Keith.
How's it going?
It's going great. How about yourself?
I'm all right. It was one of those weekends where I kind of worked for a good chunk of it.
One of those.
And I got up really early on Sunday, too, to sort of get a head start on the chart day, because we do chart stuff on Sunday if you follow the charts on Billboard.com. It was just one of those weekends where I didn't feel like I really had a weekend.
We both had very Ariana weekends, but for different reasons.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get to that later.
We'll get to that. Oh, look at you, segue. That wasn't even vaguely scripted at all. No, it wasn't. As always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got news about Ariana Grande, Aretha Franklin, Taylor Swift, Rod Stewart, and even news about a new song from DJ Snake, Cardi B, Ozuna, and Selena Gomez, all together on one
track.
What a crew.
We also have an interview with Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran makes his Pop Shop debut.
Ed Sheeran. It's insane.
We paid a visit to the chart-topping singer-songwriter to talk about his brand new Apple Music documentary, appropriately titled Songwriter. So stick around for that. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Okie dokie.
Chart chat.
Let's do the chart chat. Let's do a little chatting about the charts. First up, Ariana Grande. Or Ariana Grande. I wonder how we're supposed to say it.
Well, I actually just heard an interview with her where she said that when she was a kid, her grandpa said their last name is Grandy.
Grandy?
Yeah, it was supposed to be, you know, how a lot of people Americanize their names when they come from other countries.
Oh.
But then they kind of reclaimed it and put it back to Grande, which is Italian, and they didn't want it to be Americanized anymore.
Well, I think the Grande I had down.
But the Ariana, some people say Ariana.
Yeah, I don't ever say that.
I think she says Ariana, so that's what I say.
Ariana.
Yeah.
It's like Rihanna. I think it's Rihanna should really be Rihanna.
Some people say Rihanna. Some people say Rihanna.
I would like to just ask Rihanna and Ariana. Ariana? Never mind. So, Ariana Grande earns her third number one album on the Billboard 200 chart this week as her fourth full-length studio effort, Sweetener, enters atop the tally. The set starts with 231,000 equivalent album units earned in the week ending August 23rd, according to Nielsen Music. And of that sum, 127,000 are from traditional album sales. A good deal of the album's units were actually generated by streaming equivalent album units, which really just, that's basically a translation of the number of streams that it gets turns into this thing that we call a streaming equivalent album unit. It's fancy math, so we're not going to get into it. But speaking of that, Sweetener songs actually collected 126.7 million on-demand audio streams in its debut week. And that is the largest streaming week for a pop album by a woman.
Wow.
Ever.
Wow.
Yeah. Right?
That's awesome.
That's crazy.
I had no idea.
It's also the biggest streaming week for any non-hip-hop effort by a woman. Sweetener is the rare pop album that performs strongly on streaming services because generally rap albums are the ones that post really big streaming numbers in comparison to other genres. I actually, and this is not part of our notes here, but I wrote in my story on Sunday how there were basically 41, there have been 41 instances where an album has had 125 million or more on-demand audio streams for its songs in a single week. That could be repeat weeks for a Drake album,
right,
or Post Malone. And of those 41 instances, only four have been by something that was not a rap album.
That's, yeah.
Ariana's album, mm-hmm, Ed Sheeran's Divide, and then two Weeknd albums.
Wow.
His new one from this year, Melancholy, My Dear Melancholy, and then the Starboy album.
And some people might even put him into the hip-hop genre on, yeah, occasion.
I mean, he doesn't rap.
No, but it's, you know.
We consider those R&B
hip-hop
albums.
Adjacent.
It is. Anyways, over on the Billboard Hot 100, Grande has two songs in the top 10 at the same time, which she has done before, but it's still pretty cool. As the album's lead-off single, No Tears Left to Cry, rebounds 12-7, while God Is a Woman jumps 30-8, a new peak.
Wow.
That song is benefiting from, I believe, sale pricing at iTunes, as well as the impact of her performance of the song on the MTV
Video Music Awards
last Monday.
And the awesome music video.
Yeah, just the whole, you know, and also
the whole package.
The album coming out. Grande actually has a total of 10 songs on the Hot 100 this week. 10. 9 from her own album, along with her featured turn on Nicki Minaj's Bed, which is on Nicki's album Queen. Of note, Grande's song Pete Davidson debuts at number 99 this week. Now, Davidson is Grande's fiancé and a cast member on Saturday Night Live, and this gives us something we don't see every day, a song title on the Hot 100 that is also a person's actual name. We'll mention another example of a proper name charting on the Hot 100 a little later on the show.
You know that song is 1 minute and 13 seconds long?
Wow. Short song.
Mm-hmm.
What's it, how's it go?
Actually, the lead, like, lyric has been trapped in my head for the weekend. So, it goes, I thought you into my life. Look at my mind. I really enjoy that lyric.
I thought you into my life.
Look at my mind. That's literally the lyric, and I just keep thinking it.
Now, did she perform this at the Ariana Grande show you saw this weekend?
She did, Keith. And actually, that's why I know the exact count of it, because she performed it Saturday night for one of her Sweetener Sessions shows.
Now, this was a series of shows that she did that were, like, sort of intimate things during release week?
Yes, and they're totally, like, Sweetener-focused. She actually sang all but one song from the album and only did two non-Sweetener songs because of it happening to be the anniversary of My Everything, her sophomore album, which came out that exact date, August 25th in 2014.
Oh, okay.
So otherwise, these sessions have been entirely just new music, all the new music. And so, yeah, she sang everything. And when she finished singing Pete Davidson, she said, that song goes on for another 3 minutes in my head. And that made me laugh. So I had to look up what the exact minute count of the song was.
That's funny.
Yes.
Where was this show at?
It was at the theater at the Ace Hotel, downtown Los Angeles.
How big is it?
1,600 capacity.
Oh,
it was... Glad I wrote an article about this because I've got all your answers.
Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. I didn't read your story.
No, I'm just saying, like, I can answer all your questions because I did all this research for the article.
Did it appear? I'm assuming it was sold out.
Yes. It was, I think, a combination of contest winners.
Uh-huh. You could actually just buy tickets.
It was Amex sponsored, so like people who had Amex, you know, perks or whatever their reward system is, and industry people, press.
There were still definitely people that actually just bought normal tickets.
I think so. Because I'm telling you, I know.
Yeah,
so. I was gonna say. I think I saw that they released a batch of tickets like the day or two before.
Yeah.
So
I say this with vigor, just because I know that these particular shows, they had a ticket bundle with them. So,
oh, okay. Did not realize that.
I'm like, I know there had to be real normal people in there.
Everyone I encountered was not there normally. Like the people in line with us were contest winners. They had won it off of a radio station and were very excited.
Wow.
But it was awesome. Awesome. It was just like an hour of just straight like Sweetener. The fans were just
living.
And yeah. She also didn't have like a set list. She just literally had people shout things at her. Like, and like I said, she sang everything but one. So obviously the band was just prepared to play Sweetener, and she just did it in the order that the fan shouted things at her.
Wow.
So that's it was crazy. Super cute. And her, honestly, the best part, you know, our coworker Steven asked me what the best part was. Her like onstage banter was just like hilarious and adorable the entire time. And wow. Pete was there and introduced her. They smooched on stage to start the show.
Sure. What an intro.
That was the intro.
That was the pre-show festivities.
It was super fun.
Excuse me while I make out with my fiance.
Exactly.
back on the Hot 100, Drake's In My Feelings is still number one for the 32nd week. It's seventh. I think it's in the seventh week. Someone that we've talked about, I think, in the past, like, three shows, maybe? Two? I don't know. Janet Jackson.
Yeah.
Her
we
song.
Talk about her every show if we need to.
Yes. Janet, if you want to be on the show, just feel free to give us a ring. Janet Jackson and Daddy Yankee's Made for Now arrives on the chart. Debuts at number 88, granting Jackson her 41st charting entry on the Hot 100 and Daddy Yankee his 10th. It also debuts on the Hot R&B Hip Hop Songs chart, giving Jackson her 50th, the big 5-0 hit on the list. Nothing more to say about that other than that it shows up, and I'm happy that Janet's back on the Hot 100.
Janet's on the charts.
I love seeing my favorite artists, especially artists who, you know, where in this day and age, it's just generally hard for artists of a certain vintage, shall we say, to chart.
Legacy artists.
Like the next time when Madonna drops something, obviously I'll be stoked but to see it on the chart if it charts. But it's just also an achievement for anyone from, like, pre-2000 to get on the chart at this point. So, like, if Bruce Springsteen or Barbara Streisand or Bob Dylan, any of those people show up, it's just like, woo, let's break out the champagne. Because it's just that you don't see that.
For sure.
Lastly, 5 Seconds of Summer's Young Blood, with the song that I've talked about how much I love on this show, becomes the band's highest charting song ever on the Hot 100 as it climbs 17 to 15, surpassing the number 16 peak of Amnesia in 2014. So, yay, 5 Sauce.
Great song.
Plus, over on the Adult Contemporary Airplay chart, a chart that we don't really talk about very often, pop and rock legend or veteran, or
legacy artist. Just gonna keep spouting that.
Legacy artist. Rod Stewart scores his first top 10 hit since 2012 as Didn't It. It climbs 11 to 10. The track is from his upcoming new studio album, Blood Red Roses, which is due out September 28th.
And is this all original music? Because he's done a lot of covers albums in the last couple years.
I think this is new.
Okay.
I don't know another song called Didn't It.
So it's probably not a cover.
I listened to the song yesterday. I actually enjoyed it. There's a woman who comes in and sings on the bridge. I'm really hoping it's
Does she sing Didn't It?
I'm really hoping it's Didn't It, not Didn't I? Because now I'm thinking, Didn't I Blow Your Mind? It's definitely not a cover of Didn't I Blow Your Mind.
Amazing.
Okay.
Should we talk about the big headlines over on Billboard.com?
Please, anything but Didn't It.
So starting late Friday last week and continuing over the weekend, a flurry of Instagram posts came in confirming a brand new collaboration and music video from DJ Snake, Ozuna, Cardi B, and Selena Gomez. Cardi discussed working with DJ Snake and Ozuna back in July, but the new Insta post revealed that Selena Gomez is also in the mix. And all we know so far about the new song is that it's called Taki Taki, that's spelled T-A-K-I. And one particularly cute photo from the song's music video set had director's chairs for all the stars, along with one tiny little chair for Cardi's new baby Culture. Which I thought was really sweet.
I'm waiting for like the collaboration with a K with Culture and Asad Khalid. Khalid.
I love Asad Khalid.
I wanted to say Asad Khalid. Well, it's like a pina colada. Asad Khalid. Oh, stop.
And then Cardi also tweeted a sweet message about working with Selena, writing, "Selena Gomez is really what you think she is. A effin' sweetheart. So sweet and laid back." So stay tuned to the Pop Shop for more details on the song, since this is all we've got so far.
Is this one of those things that's going to like drop before the show actually gets posted?
Well, if it did, it's already here, guys. But no, I don't think it will. It seems like a kind of thing they'll do an official, like, you know, New Music rollout. Friday release for. So I don't think it's going to happen.
I wonder if Selena is singing in Spanish on the song.
I wondered the same. I love the entire idea of this. I'm ready for it.
Makes sense.
So Aretha Franklin's life will be celebrated in song on August 31st. Switching gears. I did no segue there. At a funeral in her native Detroit that will feature performances from 19 different acts.
Well.
We won't tell you all of them. It's a long list, but there's a lot of great
people. It's like, please tell me all 19.
The Queen of Soul will be celebrated at the Greater Grace Temple on Detroit's West Side by nearly 24 pop, R&B, and gospel singers, including Stevie Wonder, Chaka Khan, Jennifer Hudson, Faith Hill, Ronald Isley, Fantasia, Yolanda Adams, Shirley Caesar, the Clark Sisters, and Jennifer Holliday, with Greater Grace's Bishop Charles H. Ellis III officiating the service, along with the Reverend Robert Smith Jr. of Detroit's New Bethel Baptist Church. Obviously, Aretha's had ties to the city forever, so she knows literally everybody. It's going to be a massive celebration of her life and career. The funeral will be private, but some public seating might be made available later. So, you know, stay tuned to billboard.com to find out more about that. I'm not done with big names that are going to be there, though.
I was going to ask a question. So if, like, the public can't actually attend, are we assuming they're going to televise some portions of this?
Oh, you know, we don't know that yet, but that would make a lot of sense. And it has happened with large funerals
like
in the
past.
Michael Jackson,
actually, that was a public thing. Well, yeah,
that was at Staples Center.
Yeah,
we're talking
was
about a church here.
This is a little bit different.
Yeah. But there was an example. I'm trying to think of what it was. There was a really big one that I remember watching, and the Reverend Al Sharpton spoke at it.
Well, it'll come to you when you read the rest
of
this.
It will. So, in addition to all these performers, former President Bill Clinton, Smokey Robinson, Reverend Jesse Jackson, Cicely Tyson, former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, music mogul Clive Davis, and Al Sharpton will be among the speakers at the funeral. And then a separate tribute show will take place the night before at Shane Park, featuring Johnny Gill, The Four Tops, Gladys Knight, Dee Dee Bridgewater, Angie Stone, and Raheem Devon, among others. So people are lining up.
So basically, all of R&B will probably be in Detroit.
In Detroit, yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so it sounds like an appropriately, you know, massive celebration for Aretha. And finally, when 16-year-old Taylor Swift released her breakthrough single, Tim McGraw, back in 2006, do you think she had any idea that she'd be performing the song with the man himself someday in a football stadium?
I don't know. Maybe
I don't know. Maybe she did. She does dream big. That's what happened Saturday night when Taylor brought her Reputation Stadium tour to Nashville and was joined by McGraw and his wife, Faith Hill, to perform the song that started it all. The next day, she posted this caption to Instagram, along with, I think she put a little snippet of the performance on Instagram story, so I'm not sure if that's gone. You know, there's bootleg video of it, whatever, but I think the official Taylor video was only Instagram stories. But she wrote, "Nashville last night was the first time I got to headline that stadium. Every second of the show meant so much to me, and I'm so grateful to Tim McGraw and Faith Hill for coming out to sing Tim McGraw with me. I first came to the city in search of a record deal when I was 11. I'm just as enamored by being here now, all these years later. Thanks for an unforgettable night."
So that was really the first time she ever performed it with Tim?
I don't know about that. It was the first time she played Nissan Stadium, where the Tennessee Titans play. But I don't know about that. I know I've definitely heard interviews where they've spoken about it together, but
I mean,
performing
definitely,
it together, I don't know.
Like, it was on the CMAs, the ACMs, when she actually sang it to Tim McGraw, who's in the front row.
She should re-release it with him on it. Now that would be something.
It was quite the dramatic reveal, because she started off playing the song at a piano, and then she was like, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Faith Hill." And then Faith Hill comes out, and then she sings a chunk of it. And then, you know, then Taylor's like, "Please welcome the real Tim McGraw." And then he rises out from underneath the stage, like, big dramatic. And then they, you know, sing the rest of the song.
And Nashville goes wild.
Well, yeah. I mean, it seems like she's been kind of, like, she has, like, a sort of standard set list for the Reputation Tour. But then she throws a couple curveballs each night.
Definitely little treats. In every city, there's something special. Whether it's a special guest or a set list edition that she hasn't done in a while or something. Yeah. I mean, it's huge. It's a huge tour. She wants to make sure it's a huge night for everyone who comes.
Getting your money worth there.
Indeed. And now, it's time for our interview with Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran. Ed freaking Sheeran.
Oh, man. The documentary Songwriter, which premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival in the spring and just hit Apple Music for all the world to see, intimately tracks Sheeran's legendary pop songwriting process from mere idea to chart-topping hit. We chatted with Sheeran about why he wanted to let fans behind the curtain of the music machine and what it was like to let cameras into this typically very private process. It's great, by the way. I need to pass a link over to Keith to watch it.
It's a totally embargoed link.
Yes. But it's it's just like, wow, how am I watching this right now? It's total fly on the wall stuff.
I mean, I subscribe to Apple Music, so I can actually
so
watch
you can
it
watch
now.
It starting it goes online Tuesday, which okay. is when our show also goes okay. online. So sorry. It was actually directed by his cousin Murray Cummings, which is why it's so intimate. It's like he lets his cousin come in and follow along, and it's pretty magical. So we chatted all about it with Ed, and we are so happy to finally have him on the Pop Shop. So please enjoy our interview with Ed Sheeran.
I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too, I'm in love with your body.
Hello, Ed. Thanks so much for sitting down with me today.
How you doing?
I'm great. We're chatting the day before your documentary Songwriter comes out on Apple Music. And we learned from the documentary that your cousin Murray, who directed the film, he's been filming you for years. So why now for this documentary?
I didn't commission him for a documentary. Like, it wasn't like we weren't filming for a documentary. He just filmed me for archive footage. And then I think he had the clip of me. Have you seen it?
Yes.
I think he had the clip of me at the beginning on the bus, right in the beginning of Love Yourself. And he played that to people. And they really liked it. And they were like, you should make this into a documentary. So he spent a year making it. And now it's coming out. But it's one of those things I didn't know I wanted.
Sure.
until I was shown it, and I was like, oh, this is actually really good.
And it's somebody you trusted, obviously, behind the
yeah,
camera.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't have let anyone else do it.
Right.
Definitely, yeah. It definitely had to be someone that I was related to.
And it almost, I mean, it feels sort of voyeuristic at times because, you know, songwriting seems like a very, like, private, personal thing.
Mm.
So, you know, watching it back, was it kind of crazy to see that? Like, did it feel a little, like, exposed to see that?
Yeah, and I think, you know, like, It's also, I've kind of let myself go a little bit in the film. I go from very skinny and in shape on tour to just not really giving a fuck. And that's
not
kind of...
Not expecting to be on camera.
Yeah, well, that's kind of weird to see as well because, you know, as a artist in the spotlight, I mean, I like to give off the impression I don't really care what people think what I look like, but it's nice to feel healthy and in shape and you don't want pictures like that out there.
As
so having
human being,
yeah
sure.
So catching those moments of like in the studio of just like in sweatpants and a baggy t-shirt and just looking really unhealthy with long hair, it's kind of hard to watch that and be like feel good about it, but I don't know if I care that much because I know I'm all right now.
Yeah. One thing I wondered when I was watching was how much lyrical input you like to get from your collaborators, because there's a lot of times where you're kind of like writing out loud. So if you're struggling for a lyric or something, do you want someone to hop in right away and give it to you, or do you want to let your like have some silence to sit with it and come up with it yourself?
I don't know. I think it's good to bounce ideas off people. I think that's Benny's biggest talent is knowing what's good, and I think if you can come up with the melodies and the lyrics and the ideas and say them to him rather than he's not someone that kind of like goes, here's the melody, what do you think? He's someone that you come up with the melody and then he goes, no. And then you come up with another one. He goes, yeah, that one. So I think there's so many different ways of songwriting, but he's very, very good at editing.
Sure. That seems super important
to
have that. And when you went back to your old school in the movie, it kind of made me think, like, the whole movie is basically a little bit of a class in pop songwriting because a lot of people haven't seen that world before. Did it come into your mind at all doing this that an aspiring musician might be able to kind of get a view into what it looks like?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I mean, like, all I ever say to aspiring musicians, like young kids that I meet, is just, like, always write songs. Like, constantly write them. And don't worry how bad they are because they will get better. It will get better.
If you're like, Ed Sheeran, they will.
No, because I'd make... If you can Google it. You can go on YouTube and listen to the songs I did when I was 14. They're not good. And I'm not even being humble there. They're not good. People,
you get a real taste of one in the movie.
Yeah, no, but...
It's awesome.
That one's all right. But no, but go and like... If you look up... Anyone listening to this podcast, go on YouTube and type in Ed Sheeran Addicted. And just go and listen to that song. I can't sing. And it's not a very good song. It's very out of tune. And I always play that to people who say, oh, but, you know, but you're you
right,
and you've had...
Right.
And it's like, no, you do have to just start from the beginning. I imagine the first interview that you ever did was pretty... Exactly.
I'm hoping that wasn't recorded.
No, but if it was, you can listen back and be like, I've improved so much.
Yeah.
But you don't just start being good at something. So, yeah, I hope people watch this and just want to get inspired to write songs. Yeah.
Yeah. And well, speaking of aspirations, you have a fantastic line in the movie where you say, "I don't want to be the male Adele, I want to be Adele," which I really enjoyed. Of course, this is probably tongue-in-cheek, but Divide did make you the biggest-selling artist of last year, the top Billboard artist of last year as well. And it felt like you really understood how big this album could be before it was even out.
Well, I think because a lot of people kind of see that phrase as quite an arrogant thing of being, I want to be the way I explain it is, you know, if you're a basketball player, mm-hmm. you want to be LeBron James, don't you? You're not just happy.
Why else would you play basketball?
Yeah, and I'm not saying that I could ever be bigger than Adele, but if you don't aim there, then you won't ever get there. Yeah. So, you know, and she is the biggest selling artist since fucking Alanis Morissette. So like in like 20 years, she's the biggest selling artist. So you should aim to be as big as Adele. And if you don't want to be as big as Adele, then don't sign a major record label mm-hmm. deal. You know, just be independent and be happy just playing gigs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think if you sign to a major record label and you want to be the biggest artist in the world, you should aim to be the biggest artist in the world. Yeah, sorry, what was your question?
No, I mean, that was the question, basically. I mean, yeah. And artistically, not just, you know, album sales-wise, you said in the film also, it's the peak of my songwriting and musical abilities. Do you still believe that, or
no, have
you done something since?
Yeah, no, because you think, I thought that about Multiply. When I made Multiply, I was like, this is it. And then it comes out, and you're like, oh, maybe it wasn't it. And then you make the next thing. So I think, like, I have that with songs. Like every single song, the newest song that I've written is the best song I've done. And then I'll write another song, and then I'll listen back and be like, ah, actually, that's not great. So yeah, I think like you just always think the thing you're working on at the time is the best thing.
Well, and to your point about LeBron and Adele, like if you're not thinking that you're making the best music that you've ever made, then why keep making
yeah,
it?
Yeah, also like with LeBron and Adele, if you don't aim for the top of the mountain, you won't get halfway up.
Right.
And if you get halfway to being Adele and halfway to being LeBron, you're good.
For sure. You get an NBA contract. Since you released Divide, you still have done a ton of songwriting, or at least songs have had your credits on them, five songs that have hit the Billboard Hot 100, including Liam Payne, Strip That Down.
I've just done another one for him, actually.
Oh, really? Oh, for the EP?
No, it was after. Yeah, it's okay. kind of like the big brother of Strip That Down. It's good. I really like it.
Okay, that's a good tease. At the start of the film, you mentioned we see you writing Love Yourself, which, of course, ended up with Justin Bieber. What is the major difference between writing these songs? Like, when you're writing them, are you always writing them for you, or do some of them feel like this will be good for him or her?
Quite soon after doing Love Yourself, Bieber did it. Hmm. Quite like very, very soon mm-hmm. after. So like, I don't think I was ever intending to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that, I mean, obviously you said also that was the impetus of the movie, basically like him filming that scene. It was really cool to see that, you know, massive song kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it really spoke to your and Benny's relationship too, the way it just kind of flowed.
Yeah. Well, Benny's having quite a fucking moment at the moment himself now, isn't he?
Yes, another song that you had on that 100 is Eastside with Halsey and Khalid.
We did that in a hotel room in Philadelphia. I remember doing that. And I remember at the time being like, yeah, I don't know if this one works. And then suddenly it works. Yeah, well, I can't tell. I can't tell what's a hit and what's not a hit. I really can't.
Really?
I can tell what I like.
Yes.
But like, I'm not Mr. Tastemaker. I just like, there's loads of songs that come out that I listen to of like pop artists that I go, that's gonna be a smash, and then it just isn't, and I'm like, maybe I don't know. Whereas there are some songs, there's some songs I just don't get either. Some songs that I hear that go on to be like the biggest song in the world that at the time I'm like, oh, I don't know if I like that. And then eventually,
I really love an example of that if you have one.
God, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but they all ended up being big hits. But no, but there's just like, I don't know.
You don't want to say. That's fine.
But like you, I just, my point is, I don't think I know what a hit is. I just know what I like as a song.
And there's a great kind of arc in the movie where you don't have Shape of You yet, and it's like the missing piece of the movie, or the album rather. You know, how does that happen? You kind of talk through it a little bit in the movie, but like, how do you? You're like, I got this thing, and I think it might be it. You know, how'd you know that?
Well, that was actually Eraser.
Really?
Yeah. But it's kind of like made in the film. Okay, yeah. So I had an idea for Eraser,
okay.
And I was like, I think this might be the one. And then I did Eraser, and then it just
as soon as I did it, I was like, this is the first track on the album. This isn't the song. But yeah, it's edited, the film's edited in a way so you think it's Shape of You. But Shape of You was like an afterthought. The album was done and handed in, and Shape of You happened.
And then
the album got opened up again and put on.
That's amazing. Final question. You have a little quip at the very end of the film, after the credits, where you tease a title for your eventual fourth album. I'm not going to say it. I won't spoil it for anyone who wants to watch. But is that a joke or a real possibility for an album title?
I don't know what to say. Would it?
Oh, well, you say Subtract, maybe?
Oh, right. Yeah. Cool. That's not the next thing that's going to come out. Okay. But that is an album title that I've been playing with.
And is there... Have you been in the headspace of writing that next fourth album at this point?
Do you know what? Subtract was meant to be the third album.
Mm.
Meant to be.
And ended up Divide instead.
Yeah, well, it started off being... The reason it was Divide was because it felt... There were six songs that were acoustic and six songs that were kind of like Shape of You-y, New Man, you know, and... It felt like a divided album, but obviously when you mix them up, it feels like an album. So that was why it was Divide. So it started off being this acoustic record that ended up being something else.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, very cool. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. Nice one.
All right. Dancing in the dark with you between my arms. Thank you so much to Ed Sheeran for chatting with us about Songwriter. And like I said, totally check it out, especially if you're an Ed Sheeran fan. This is spoiling nothing, but the intro scene. So the very first thing, I feel like I'm not spoiling anything. You're watching him and Benny Blanco write what becomes Justin Bieber's Love Yourself.
Oh, wow.
And it literally, like, when it was first happening, I'm like, Ed, this sounds just like Love Yourself. Try to, like, write something new. And then I realized we're literally watching him create Love Yourself. So this happened a long time ago. I mean, that song's been out for many moons. So the cousin has been following him for quite some time. So this footage is spectacular.
I wonder, well, I'll have to watch it now because I'm sure people are wondering, too. And I don't want you to spoil it, but I'm now curious, like, did he intend on writing that for Justin, or did he intend on writing it for himself? I will watch it and find out.
There's no indication from, I'll tell you now.
Okay.
I think that he probably wrote it like he writes any other song, and some things end up with him, and some things end up with other people, but it's pretty cool.
That kind of reminds me of what happened, like, when Taylor, speaking of, you know, Taylor and Ed are friends and they've collaborated together. It reminds me of when Taylor posted those sort of behind the scenes videos of the making of Reputation.
Yes.
Where it showed, like, it was just her filming herself writing songs that ended up
leaving voice notes to herself
and
that become hooks that become. Yeah.
And it was like, I can't do that. How do you
do that?
Oh,
that's the whole time I'm watching it, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, the idea of that kind of creative process stressed me out because it would be the kind of thing that I would want to entirely hole myself up and be by myself. And he's in rooms with all these other musicians doing it live. It's magical.
Wow. Also reminds me, sorry, now I've just, like, devolved. But if you dig this documentary based on what Katie just told me, I haven't seen it, but obviously I will. You'll probably also enjoy when Dave Grohl did his,
Sound City
thing, where he went to, like, different studios across the U.S. and, like, collaborated with musicians. So, like, he would show up and, like, just improvise and do a song with Paul McCartney or with Stevie Nicks or whatever.
It's a special talent that a handful of people have, and it's pretty cool to watch it, you know, unfold.
Alrighty. Well, now it's time for the chart stat of the week. This week in 1986, Steve Winwood got his first number one on the Hot 100 with Higher Love. The track, which includes background vocals by Chaka Khan and guitar work from friend of the podcast, Nile Rodgers, it ascended to the top of the list dated August 30th, 1986. Winwood would later top the chart for a second and so far final time in 1988 with Roll With It. Now, Higher Love would go on to win a pair of Grammy Awards, Best Pop Vocal Performance Male, as well as Record of the Year. It was a single from Winwood's album Back in the High Life, which was also Grammy nominated for Album of the Year. Now, this is a longer chart set of the week. for good reason. It's something I'm very passionate about.
Okay.
Higher Love also brings to mind one of my big pet peeves regarding charts. How artists who are prominently featured on a song don't get artist billing on the single, and thus go without a credited hit as an artist on our charts. For Higher Love, it was billed simply to Steve Winwood, though both Shaka and Niall are billed as guest musicians within the album's liner notes, so it wasn't like he was ignoring them. On Higher Love, Shaka's voice is heard on the chorus of the track as she harmonizes with Winwood. But then when you get to the final minute of the single edit of the song, it's basically a showcase for Shaka to just wail, like, "Bring me!" You know, I can't do Shaka. I'm so sorry, Shaka. Further, both Shaka and Niall are featured in the official music video of the song. Like, they're in the video, like, performing with Steve Winwood. So today, had this song been released, it would have likely been billed as Steve Winwood featuring Shaka Khan. And maybe if Rogers had worked out a smart deal, even he could have gotten a featured artist credit too. What makes this even more annoying? Shaka does not have her own number one on the
Hot
100.
That's insane.
The closest she got was number three with her own song, I Feel For You.
I feel for you.
I think I love you. Written by Prince. Which peaked at number three in 1984, as well as Tell Me Something Good, which was billed to, of course, Rufus, featuring Shaka Khan back when she was with Rufus. So, there you have it. This week in 1986, Steve Winwood's Higher Love, not featuring Shaka Khan, but maybe should have been, hit number one on the Hot 100.
Steve Winwood is listening.
I think Steve Winwood actually would agree. It was a different time in 1986. Yeah. It was very rare
features
to see.
In general were rare.
No, there was actually a really fascinating podcast that Chris Malanfi, who's a big chart geek, chart watcher, has. If you just Google Chris Malanfi podcast. And it was just all about the concept of featured artists, duets, and how sometimes people would be like have it's effectively a duet, but they aren't credited. And now the phenomenon is just as such where like everyone and their mom is credited, unless you were on, say, the Travis Scott album.
In which case,
you're Stevie Wonder and you don't get an artist credit.
Or if you're Aloe Black.
Sure, Aloe Black.
Avicii.
With the late Avicii.
Indeed.
Hoo boy, that was longer than I anticipated.
That's all good.
I was very passionate.
You promised us something earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't heard about it yet. Pete Davidson is a proper name of somebody in a song.
Oh, right.
What are the other examples of that?
Oh, well, the other example that I didn't actually address was Tim McGraw.
Oh, there we go. I was like, wait, we didn't talk about that. I was expecting it in the chart stack.
I was going to jump in and interrupt you, but then I just sort of got waylaid.
Well, that's why I brought it back up. So,
well, thank you for addressing it, because we teased it, and then we just dropped the ball.
The people are waiting.
Any parting woods? Woods. Words. Words. They're difficult to say.
Sherwood Forest.
Sherwood.
My parting woods.
Sherwood Forest. That's difficult to say. Sherwood. Sherwood Forest.
It's almost as hard to say as didn't it.
We're going to find out that Rod Stewart song is called Didn't I.
No. Ooh, can we go out on some Rod Stewart?
Oh, yeah. Which one?
I'm leaving this in your court.
Do you think I'm sexy?
Obviously.
It's not what we're...
The song.
The song. See you guys next time.
Bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.